Jonathan Ross is a communications and public policy expert behind the Vancouver-based firm TTH Strategies. We're bringing Jonathan on this morning to talk about the federal political goings-on as well as local Vancouver politics. He's had extensive political experience federally, provincially, and municipally, and as a writer, he's been published in a number of newspapers in the country. The TTH Strategies website is tdhstrategies.com, where Jonathan regularly opines on all matter of politics. Please welcome to thecommentary.ca, Jonathan Ross. Good morning, Mr. Ross.
Hi, Joe.
Thanks for joining us. Sam Sullivan defeating Christy Clark. Let's talk locally for just a sec, because that's the issue that everybody in the city is talking about. At least that's what I think everybody's talking about. Was that a surprise to you that Sullivan defeated the former Liberal cabinet minister?
Personally, it's a shock because I've been on the tail, the opposing end of the Christy Clark machine before. I've seen how the Martin political machine can kick their troops into action. So I was really shocked when I got the results called in to me. But, you know, this is, quite frankly, a lot larger than a local issue because this has federal implications all over it. The Sullivan campaign was well-stocked with some high-profile federal conservative organizers, and then there was the Mark Marison machine, of course, backing up Christy Clark. So very surprised, but, you know, the way that the day turned out, traditional membership in the NPA came out first, and then the new sign-ups that particularly the Clark campaign had signed up really didn't show up like they had expected.
Well, was the result as close as the Sun says this morning, 70 votes or so?
It was actually under that. From my sources, I heard it was about 65 votes. It's funny, I had a global reporter call me up last week, and he said, what do you think it's going to be? And I said, within 100 votes. So I was a little, I foreshadowed there, but I, you know, again, I expected a tight race, but I didn't have a see Sullivan pulling in the numbers that he needed to, so.
Christy Clark's political aspirations are well known, that she will run again. Where is the question, probably, for the Liberal leadership in Victoria? What does this defeat do for her career, if anything?
Well, like I wrote on the site this morning, she's had a very charmed political life. 96, she gets, you know, recruited, plucked out of the federal Liberal scene, young Liberal scene, by Gordon Campbell, and is asked to run. And then again, she has the Paul Martin young Liberal crowd backing her, and that's how she wins the election in Port Moody in 96. And ever since then, it's been smooth sailing, largely because she's always had that political machine to rely on. So this is a huge huge loss for her, and it's a huge shock to her political career. Now, everyone's talking about her ascension to premier. I've always seen her as someone that's been a strong federal Liberal, despite the Campbell leanings of his government, and I've always seen her jumping onto the federal scene. The mayoral race was a surprise for a lot of us, but I really think that her next step could very well likely be into federal politics. Now, my prediction largely before the mayoral race came up was that she was going to take on James Moore out in POCO, and have a battle of the political heavyweights, because I knew she had federal aspirations back in the mid-90s when I first met her.
Man, that'd be so, just as a political observer, James Moore against Christy Clark.
I still think it could happen. I don't think it's going to happen now,
yeah.
But I do think that Christy will be in the federal scene one way or another.
Jim Green, Sam Sullivan battle in November for mayor.
Mm-hmm.
How does that look to you at this point? It's a ways away. A lot could happen until then.
You know, it's after Saturday's result, it's hard to count Sam Sullivan out of anything. But the way I see it is Jim Green's going to have a clear advantage going into November. He's got the Larry Campbell backing. He's been side by side with the mayor for the last 3 years. Sullivan has only emerged as as a political power player and a mayoral material in the last couple months. In fact, if you talked to anyone 6 months ago of who the NPA was going to run for the mayor's spot, it was always thought of Ladner. Peter Ladner was always the one that was going to go for it, even though he was a new councillor. They always thought he had the backing of the West Side, of the establishment and the NPA thought him as a favorable person to put forward if no one else came out of the woodworking. So he's new to the scene in terms of this mayoral aura that you need going into November. I think Jim Green's got a good grasp of the issues. He's got a good base of support both from Cope and the moderates from his time with Larry, and I think that right now he's the clear favorite. And I can't, you know, again, I can't take Sam out of the race entirely, but it's going to be very difficult for him to topple Jim Green. And you know, in my view, the real battles are going to be for the councillor spots. That's where the you know, if everyone thought that there was a split council in previous years, particularly this past year, you know, they have nothing, nothing on what's going to come after November.
Now, just about Vision Vancouver for a sec. Over the summer, I'd read on your site as well as Sean Holman's very fine website, Public Eye Online, about your involvement with that. Would you kindly walk us through that if we're unfamiliar?
Well, back in November, December, I've been working with the mayor's office informally for the last couple of years, and it was thought, I had no confirmation and neither did any of his staff, that Larry was going to leave, but in December I knew that there was going to be some kind of split coming down the pipes. So I had sent Larry Campbell a proposed speech back in December before his press conference announcing that he was doing an independent caucus in Cope. And the name of his new entity in my speech was Vision of Vancouver. I subsequently took that to Leonard Shine, who was one of the founders of the Friends of Larry group. He presented it to the board in March, April. And I was told in June, after a meeting with the mayor's office, that my name had been adopted. Now, I've never had a huge involvement with the Friends of Larry Campbell because, and now Vision Vancouver, because they've been always in a very enclosed group. So that's how they've been organized. That's how they choose to organize themselves. And so I've kind of kept my nose clean of them. But that's how the name came about. I lobbied for it hard with the mayor's office, and it was presented to the board, as I said, in May, April. So Vision of Vancouver became shortened to Vision Vancouver.
Do you foretell a role in the upcoming campaign?
As of now, I can't see it. If someone were to approach me, I'd consider it. But I think for this municipal campaign, I'm going to sit back and just watch as a commentator rather than as an active participant.
Let's move federally for just a sec here. I'm watching my screen, and John Effort, the Natural Resources Minister, has stepped down.
Mm-hmm.
Is a bigger cabinet shuffle in the works for Mr. Martin federally?
See, it's been rumored for a long time, and, you know, I have friends like Ruby Dalla, the young upstart out of Brampton, who's been touted as a cabinet material for you know, since she got elected in 2004. So there's a lot of people on his back benches, and from what I'm hearing, and I just read this also over the weekend, is that, you know, so close to an election, for him to talk cabinet shuffle or to disappoint, as it was put in the article that I read, disappoint so many of his backbench MPs that are just clamoring to get into the front benches, would be political suicide. The Martin forces are known for turning on their leader, and I don't think that this leader is any more privileged than Chrétien or Turner was. So, to me, I think that he's going to stand pat for the time being. I think that they suspect that there's a very good likelihood that there's going to be an election come November, either triggered by the Tories or even the NDP, despite how they're talking. So right now, with everything up in the air, a cabinet shuffle wouldn't really benefit the government, and I don't think Martin's inclined to create a lot of instability just so close to an election.
I was reading that piece that you wrote for the Hill Times.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, would a future cabinet, whether there be a shuffle or not, include Larry Campbell?
I mean, it's been rumored, it's been spoken about. You know, I became privy to how Campbell was recruited in the last couple months, and it's been a process that started early this year. by none other than Mark Mearson. So I think that it was very much a coup for the Liberals to get Larry into the Senate, into their caucus. I think that he's going to be good for them on the election trail, and I think he's going to be great in terms of issues. It gives them a lot of credibility in the West. But in terms of a cabinet, I mean, I've speculated about it, and so many others have, but I find it very very unlikely that Martin would pull the trigger and put him in. You know, Jack Austin, I don't see Jack Austin continuing on that much longer as the senior minister in BC, and as a senator, to be quite frank. He's coming to the end of his term. And there's a lot of other BC caucus members that would be furious. So as much as I think it would be a great move for Martin to do it, I don't think he has the gumption to actually pull the trigger and put Larry into cabinet. Also because of the fact that this is a man that you can't control, and this is a guy that's not afraid to sit as an independent member in the Red Chamber. So for someone that's ready to sit as an independent and that you can't Martin couldn't keep under his thumb, it's a dangerous proposition for him to consider it, especially this early.
Well, was joining the Liberal Party incumbent on for Larry Campbell to accepting the nomination, the appointment to the Senate?
I don't think that membership was ever something that they hammered to him. I don't think that was a concern. Mark Mearson's a very very intelligent guy. As you know, he orchestrated. You know, we've talked about Christie's political career, but he's orchestrated the only gains in terms of a provincial seat total for Martin in the last election. So he knows what he's doing, and he knew that getting Larry Campbell on board into the Liberal caucus was a coup in itself. So signing his name on the dotted line of a Liberal membership, I think, was the least of his worries.
Now, the story about Pierre Pettigrew and his chauffeur, mm-hmm. What are we to make of that? Rafe Mayer was talking with, I think, Mike Duffy on Friday, and he was just saying, you know, it's a difficult story to talk about because we really don't know what's going on there, and they don't know how to approach the supposed relationship between the minister and his chauffeur. How do you expect this story to come out or to pan out in the next couple of weeks, does Pettigrew's cabinet position, is that ever in question?
Personally, I'm surprised that there hasn't been a bigger public outcry, although I think that people are so kind of tired of corruption and political ministers taking liberties with the public trust and the powers of their office that people have maybe even tuned out at this point. In terms of the relationship with Pettigrew and his chauffeur, I think it's irrelevant. And for Mike Duffy to talk about how people are dancing around that, well, it shows that I think that the Canadian media is so afraid to tread on something that they would seem as they would deem as something that goes into the world of controversy in terms of relationships. But that isn't the issue. It's not the issue entirely. We have a minister that brought along a chauffeur on the public purse as a staff person to international locales. We also have a minister that tried to cover up his deed by saying that it was done for security reasons, that this chauffeur double duty was doing double duty as his security advisor. So that's a breach of trust, and it's also a cover-up. You know, his relationship, whether it's personal, whether it's a friendship, whether it's a professional relationship, is not the story. And for anyone to tread on that ground is just shows how irrelevant the story has become. You know, these rumors and innuendo surrounding Pierre Pettigrew have been going on for years. They're nothing new. They might be something new to the Canadian public, but like Trudeau once said, what goes on in the nation's the bedrooms of the nation, no one cares about. And this is our Canada. This is not the United States, where a governor will resign over not the fact that he had a relationship with one of his staff members and abused the public trust. It was the fact that it was a homosexual relationship. In this country, that's not the issue here. The issue should be about why we have a minister trying to cover up taking his chauffeur on $10,000 trips.
Michael Ignatieff. His name, he's relocated to Canada, I understand. possible liberal, could that be attached to possibly succeeding Paul Martin?
No, it has been. And with great fanfare, he came into the last liberal convention in the spring, and he gave a resounding speech that everyone was talking about, and was supposedly it brought new policy forth, but it also kind of gave a subtle knock to Martin. Well, I just find, as someone who's been around the Liberal Party for a decade and has been involved in the Liberal leadership race for this past one, I find it very interesting that Michael Ignatieff, a gentleman who is an internationally renowned academic, but someone who's been out of the country for the past 30 years, is seen as the big, exciting candidate. And I think it's really an indication of the state of the Liberal Party more than anything. We have a group of candidates, or rumored candidates right now, that really fail to inspire any kind of excitement. You know, you have Frank McKenna, who's just gotten into the U.S. As the Canadian ambassador. We got John Manley, who I was speaking to Warren Kinsella last week, and Manley, he had seen him about a week or two previous to that, showed really very little interest in coming back into the fold. Then you have Volpe, Joe Volpe, who's a current minister, who's, you know, got the GTA locked up, but is very much unknown outside of Ontario. You've got Bevilacqua, who's kind of the token backbench candidate, the underdog. Brian Tobin's always there as the political ambitious opportunist that will always put his name into the leadership fold, but hasn't been around the federal scene for many years and hasn't been organizing actively for many years. And Martin Cochon, who's the Quebec candidate and also the Chrétien candidate. But the fact that Ignatieff, again, is seen as the big excitement in the Liberal leadership race, or the unofficial Liberal leadership race, shows that there's not a lot going on, and there's no obvious successor. Chrétien had an obvious successor. Turner had an obvious successor. Martin has no obvious successor, and that's why Ignatieff has sparked so much interest.
We're talking with the political consultant Jonathan Ross, TDH Strategies is his firm. TDHstrategies.com is the website where you can read his commentaries on politics. Let's touch on Stephen Harper. How is his grasp on the leadership of his party?
Well, I just wrote about this morning. I think that there's been a lot of speculation that a fall election will be triggered by the Tories. And at 24% in the polls compared to 40-plus for the Liberals, I can't see any reason for the Tories to try to initiate an election other than those red Tories that are trying to get Harper out. You know, if you look at the media and who's been fueling the speculation of an early election in the fall, it's been Peter McKay. And Peter McKay has always been rumored and known as the likely successor, internally at least, to Stephen Harper. So I think that, you know, with this Carol Anderson Tory
Jameson,
Council...
Carol
Jameson Tory Council fiasco that's going on right now. We have an internal war that's gone very public. It's the most public that we've seen the right of center split since the Stockwell Day fiasco. And, you know, Stephen Harper's grip on his leadership has never been more tenuous. In my opinion, and the way I've looked at it, is he had an election in the summer of 2004 that he had a real opportunity to win, and he squandered it. You know, this was the height of people's anger towards the sponsorship scandal, towards the Liberal government, and he, 2 weeks before, was talking about how he was going to lead a majority government. He started talking about child pornography. He ran a bad campaign for the final 2 weeks, and ever since then, people have known that they squandered their chance at becoming government, the best chance they've had in the past 12 years. So I think that Harper is going into this fall session with too many question marks. He's taken out now... He's showing his personal vendetta against the media, which is not a very smart strategy to attack the media. You know, the media is the only ones that are going to be able to put him in a position to topple Martin, and now he's taking them on squarely. So his priorities are a little bit scrambled. He's got to protect his back. He's fired every staff person that has ever walked through his office in the past year, and who knows how long this new crew is going to last. So, he's, you know, I just think that it's a matter of time, and I think that if a Tory election is initiated, you know, they're not going to win. Harper's not going to win, and as soon as he loses, that's the day that the Tory conservative leadership race begins.
So the Gomery report, whenever that'll come out, that will not ensure a conservative victory, you think?
No, I think it's a tired issue, to be quite frank. We have November 1st, which will be the first Gomery report, and that's going to be all the dirt. That's gonna be harmful to the Liberals. But, you know, it's not something that Canadians haven't heard before. So whereas that story might resonate for 5-6 days, maybe a week or two, past that, Canadians' anger is not going to be sustained. Harper does not have it. If he could not sustain the anger to make him the Prime Minister in June of 2004, not 4 months after the sponsorship scandal erupted, then he certainly doesn't have to do it now. And then, you know, we have a second report in February, which is going to be about recommendations. And if an election happens in February, March, post that report, like Martin has promised, then, you know, the government can cling to that they've made the changes necessary and they're moving forward on that. So I just don't think Harper has enough in his arsenal right now to imbue the public with enough anger and passion on how they have to get rid of the Liberals. He hasn't presented a clear alternative. He's shown himself to be a weak leader. He's shown himself to be in charge of a party that's split, and it's been split ever since that Tory convention in March. You know, this has been ready to happen, and now it's just going public. So I don't think that there's going to be enough there to get the public enamored with Stephen Harper. I think he's done. Put a fork in him.
Butter, he's toast.
I'd say so. It's just a matter of time. And it's a matter of, you know, they're not going to switch the leader before an election, but as soon as he loses that election, and rest assured he will lose that election, you know, that's the day that Bernard Lord and Peter McKay and everyone else comes out of the woodwork and starts campaigning openly.
Jonathan, before I let you go, I want to ask about TDH Strategies. Talk to us about the work that you do there and the kind of work that you're able to do if someone wishes to procure your services.
Sure. I'm a communications professional first and foremost. Writing is my bread and butter, so I do everything from policy reports. I just finished an academic paper for the World Urban Forum coming next year. I've written for all three levels of government. I do business writing. I do corporate writing. So various ranges of different communication products I produce. But I also mix that. I guess my company's best feature is the fact that we combine our communication skills with policy and knowledge of politics. And it's kind of that trifecta that makes my company, I guess, stand out. You know, and there's a lot of big firms that do government relations. I don't pride myself on doing government relations. We're not about a Rolodex. We do have contacts, but we're not involved in politics and public policy to sell names and to sell contacts. We're here to do policy work that gives a little bit of edge on the political side of things and produces top-notch communications.
Well, Jonathan, if people want to get in touch with you, tdhstrategies.com, right?
Absolutely. All my contact info is there.
And if they want to read your political commentaries, they can do that as well.
Yeah, I write every day, most weekdays, and sometimes even on the weekends. But we do a political commentary daily.
And I do recommend it because I do read his site practically every day, and I do enjoy it. It's among my list of must reads every morning.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again for joining us, Jonathan.
Appreciate it, Joe.
TDHStrategies.com is the website for the commentary. I'm Joseph Plenum.